Blog Talk Radio.
Sports City Chefs, it's your boy, the villain. We about to do it nice and lovely today. The baseball buffet, talking all things baseball. Got a lot to get to today. A lot of rumors, a lot of news, a lot of reminiscing, I guess you can call it. We're going to have a little fun. Having a little technical difficulty, so today might be an interesting show today, but we're gonna try and do this thing properly. Got NJ the Flory Kane in the building with us on this Wednesday. I think it was what, August 13th. August, this time is flying, ladies and gentlemen. It's crazy, NJ. It is crazy, but. Usually I hit him with a little intro music, but I mean, like literally, Sports City, we're really having technical difficulties. So if I can get going, I will.
If those technical difficulties mean we don't have to listen to your 5-minute long intro, I'm good with that.
Oh, don't be jealous, NJ, because this is what I'm talking about. People see the villain. They see the villain doing this thing, trying to hit the people with a little intro music, and then people get mad. They get mad. But NJ, what up, baby?
What's going on, man?
Ain't nothing, man. Call the number 917-889-9592. We with you for the next hour plus, talking all things Major League Baseball. And then we got, if I can bring them in, I'm telling you, NJ, this is Sports City, Blog Talk Radio. Get your thing together, Blog Talk Radio, because the site is going haywire right now. But we do got Chandler on the line. Chandler Knight, what up?
Hey, what's up, Barrett?
Ain't nothing, man. You know, I would have hit him with the intro. I think the superhero is sabotaging you. I think he's sabotaging my computer or something. And you can hear the little villain in the background. That's his new favorite word, daddy. So he says daddy all day, every day, nonstop. And it's like, what? Daddy, yes. Yeah, it's crazy, but calling number 917-889-9592. Baseball Buffet, Sports City Chefs Network, Blog Talk Radio. So, boys, I think it was yesterday, was the 20-year anniversary of the Major League Baseball strike that happened in 1994. The year that never was, the first year, I think, in a long time. But they didn't have the World Series played. The owners didn't want to deal with the players. The players went on strike. They didn't want to negotiate. They thought they can get scabs in there, all that great stuff. But it was the last year. The Yankees were in first place. So was the Montreal Expos, now known as the Washington Nationals. I'll start with you, Chandler. What do you remember about the 94 strike, and what was the impact, do you think, that strike had on Major League Baseball as a whole?
Well, I think they lost a lot of fans. I think that was the beginning of the end of baseball as a national pastime. 94, there was a lot of interest up to that point. You had a Montreal in it, so you had a lot of teams in it, because that was the start of the Yankees basically kind of turning their franchise back around, starting to win again. There was a lot of interest. Montreal was just doing great things. And it cost baseball a lot of fans. It turned baseball from national pastime into a regional sport. In many ways, they ruined baseball with that work stoppage. And it's both sides' fault. It's the players and the owners' fault. Although I'll always side with the employees over the employers. That's just me. I know most fans try to blame the employees and say they're supposed to be responsible for controlling costs, which is the dumbest thing I've ever heard, because ain't nobody else taking no pay cut to keep their business going, okay, because their boss is spending too much money or their boss don't know how to manage their money. But it destroyed baseball in many ways, and it also was the start or was kind of what, you know, when they tried to bring it back, that's why they really turned a blind eye to steroids at the same time. You know, so all of those things, it was like a perfect storm of mess for baseball, and baseball is still dealing with the fallout.
Yeah, I mean, I remember looking at that, looking back at the roster, because I didn't get a lot of Montreal games, but looking back at that Montreal roster and the talent that they had on that team, when you go down the line from Larry Walker to Marquise Grissom, I mean, that was such a loaded team, and it's a shame that those fans were ultimately robbed of a possible championship team, because they were the best team in baseball, Expos. They had the best record up until the strike. I remember that last game. I think it was the Seattle game was the last game that was played. Went into midnight, and then that was it. There was no more baseball. And I couldn't understand it. I mean, I was about 13 years old. I couldn't understand it. NJ, what do you remember about that baseball strike? That it was a strike, but I mean, basically the owners didn't want to come to the table and do business. What do you remember about that strike?
Well, I mean, I was, you know, a little older than you, and that was kind of, you know, I mean, I was in high school. I was big into, you know, at that point, collecting baseball cards, and you know, me and my father used to go to all kinds of shows and sell them. So it was a little more than a hobby. So I was, you know, that playing baseball and stuff like that, it, you know, I was definitely, you know, pretty heavily vested into, you know, into baseball in all forms. And, you know, I mean, the other thing, too, is being a Mets fan, obviously that was, you know, during one of the Mets' many dark periods that they've had. You know, they were pretty abysmal around that time. I mean, that was, you know, the Eddie Murray, you know, Brett Sabre, Coleman, you know, debacle, you know, seasons. But I remember, you know, number one, I mean, the first thing I remember was Tony Gwynn. You know, I remember him, and then it was, you know, either the same year, the year before, the year after, you know, George Brett, you know, was in the chase for 400 for a while. But I remember then, you know, being there was mid-August, you know, Tony Gwynn, I think, was hitting about 390 at the time, and, you know, his average just seemed to keep climbing after the All-Star break. And it was one of those things where, you know, everybody was, you know, like Chandler said, I mean, everybody, you know, baseball was, you know, more popular at that point than it had been in a long time. And things like that, I mean, you know, Tony Gwynn chasing Ted Williams, you know, chasing 400, trying to become the first person, Ted Williams in 41 to do it. You know, that was, you know, something that, you know, kept everybody interested. The other thing, too, is at the time, Matt Williams was on pace, I think, for 62 or 63 home runs. I think he had something like 35 the All-Star break. And, you know, at the time, nobody had hit more than 60, you know, nobody had beaten Maris's record yet. Nobody had hit 62. And whether or not he would have actually was another story, but it was, you know, definitely a storyline. It was something people were paying attention to. But what's really funny, I remember an interview with Matt Williams not too long ago, and they asked him about that season. And he actually referred to it as his 1-for-4 season. He said, I strike out 3 times and hit a solo home run. Because I think he was hitting somewhere around 225 or 230. But nobody really cared about that. And then, you know, of course, there were the Expos. You know, I mean, Montreal at that point had, you know, I mean, they were kind of going, you know, they were, I guess, basically the model for what the Marlins have become since, you know, where they would have, you know, a lot of top guys that would come up, you know, through their system and become superstars and, you know, ultimately wind up bailing, you know, once free agency came around. But, I mean, that team, I think they started out something like 1-4 and 1-5, and it just looked like, you know, they were going to be the Expos all over again. And, you know, at the time of the strike, you know, we're something like 34, 35, just over 500, you know, had the best record of baseball. They were absolutely on a roll. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, even back then, I mean, the trade deadline, you know, I don't think, you know, you really had some of the big-time moves that you have now just because of what contracts were. But, I mean, they were like a $10 or $12 million payroll that year, you know, and had some room to still improve that team and probably would have. And, I mean, I definitely think, you know, it sucks that they got robbed of, you know, what probably would have been their only World Series. And then, you know, again, going back to what Chandler said, you know, I mean, after that, baseball popularity was really destroyed. And, you know, I do agree that, you know, that was part of the reason baseball probably, you know, did turn a little bit of a blind eye to steroids. Because, let's face it, until, you know, Sosa, McGuire, you know, chasing Maris and then chasing 65 and chasing 70 homers, you know, nobody, you know, baseball wasn't really, you know, nobody really cared, you know, the way they did back then. But all of a sudden, you know, once you have, you know, Sosa and McGuire break 50 and 55 homers and everything like that, all of a sudden, you know, baseball back at the forefront and, you know, not one guy chasing errors, but two guys, and it just, you know, at that point, baseball's popularity really started to pick up again. But it's, I mean, it definitely killed the sport for, you know, for 10 years, and it's really a shame. But that season, I definitely think, you know, I definitely think we would have seen a lot of special things happen that year.
Yeah, there were so many things that were going on that year, so many good things with Tony Gwynn. I had forgot that he was at, what, 394 when the season had ended. You know, the Expos, obviously, the Yankees, because I was a Yankee fan and watching that team play so well, and then all of a sudden it's like it's over. I mean, yeah, the impact of what, you know, at that point, I don't think, you know, I think baseball was the number one sport in the country, and NFL moved right in, took over. I mean, because it was like, well, we don't care, we don't have baseball. Football season started right around the corner, and football hadn't looked back. I mean, it became the national pastime at that point, and now it's the number one sport. I mean, baseball's number two. I mean, you can argue basketball being number two, but basketball doesn't make nearly as much revenue as baseball does, so, and it's still very popular. So, yeah, I mean, Chandler's right. I mean, the impact of getting the game back the next year, and they were going to go into the year with replacement players, but they finally thought better of it and got a deal done. And basically, if it wasn't for steroids and Cal Ripken, the whole game of baseball, God knows what would have happened. You had a lot of rules changed then, too. I mean, just the player interaction, like players were pretty much forced to sign autographs before the game just to pique the interest of the young kids and to get them back into the game and loving baseball. So, yeah, that strike, it was a crazy year, 94. It just came up. I saw it on ESPN, and they appropriately brought it up to me in the green room talking about, you know, the anniversary of that. So, yeah, the impact of the strike, it was felt, and it's, you know, we still feel the ripple effects because now we're trying to clean the game up more or less, and we're still feeling the effects of that. So, you know, it was definitely important.
The other thing, now that I think about it, is also looking back. Let's also, you know, what the possible chance of winning a World Series would have been. I mean, it was kind of thing where, you know, Astros fans would show up the first month of the season. You know, the team was out, you know, was typically out of it not long after, and they would take off. But, I mean, 94, their attendance, I mean, they were, you know, they definitely would have gone well over a million fans for the, you know, for the first time. And, I mean, the possibilities at that point, I mean, you really have to think and wonder what really would have happened with that team had they actually won the World Series. You know, and people, you know, then came out and supported the team in droves the next year. You know, would they ultimately have, you know, left Montreal playing home games in Puerto Rico and eventually, you know, wound up a laughing stock before, you know, before going to Washington? It's something else that I think, you know, when you look at it, it's really one of those what-if type scenarios that, you know, had it played out, you know, could have actually impacted, you know, the landscape of what baseball looks like today because, you know, like I said, we may not have the Nationals right now. We might still be in Montreal, you know, may have had a brand-new billion-dollar stadium in Montreal, and, you know, who knows, maybe at that point, you know, Loria never would have assumed, you know, almost 100% ownership of the team and, you know, did to them what he did to the Marlins. And it's, you know, it really is one of those things where being that there are, you know, there are so many questions that are unanswered. And that, I think, is just another one, you know, another one of those situations that you pointed out, you know, could have changed, you know, what we know as baseball today.
I mean, yeah, it's a valid point. Maybe the Expos are still in Montreal if this whole strike didn't happen. Shelly, what do you think about that?
I think Montreal will still have a franchise, whether they won the World Series or not. They were cementing their fan base that year. They were growing the game of baseball. I mean, Toronto hasn't won since God knows when, but they still have a loyal fan base. Maybe not the attendance they want, but they have enough attendance to keep the lights on. You understand what I'm saying? They have a fan base, and those fans have grown up, and their kids are fans because of those Blue Jays teams. You could have had the same thing with Montreal. there's so many things that would have been different. There's careers. Guys like Burt Blyleven, who I hate as an announcer, but I liked him as a pitcher because he had one of those real funky deliveries that I love. You know, guys like him who would have, that would have been their last season, their careers ended because of that strike. You know, there are a lot of guys who are borderline Hall of Famers whose careers ended, who won't get in the Hall of Fame because they didn't hit that magic number, and they may have had a chance to hit some of those magic numbers. You know, there's a lot of things that strike ruined. I mean, utterly destroyed. And when you look back now, we look back now, and I don't, I really, and this is why I've always hated Bud Selig, because he was one of the hardline owners, by the way. He was one of the hardline owners that refused to negotiate. Okay, so my hatred for Bud Selig started in 1994. All right. There's a lot of things I think that would be different with the game. I think baseball would still be the number one sport in this country, if not for that strike.
Absolutely. And by the way, speaking of Bud Selig, just on another side note, apparently the vote on who's going to be his successor as commissioner is supposed to take place tomorrow afternoon. I'm curious to see if the owners will screw that up or if they'll actually get it right.
I'm hearing rumors, NJ, that, they might be so deadlocked that they might not be able to find an owner at the end of that vote, and they might have to keep Selig on as some kind of advisory role until they get it sorted out. I mean, that's what I was hearing yesterday. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that vote, because, I mean, I know Chandler, like me, I can't wait to see this guy get out of here, but, there's a lot of things going on that now that you look at it. I mean, Tony Quinn was, he was chasing the 400. And then Matty Williams, say what we want about him, he was getting close to that home run record. I mean, before Bonds, he had, I think it was, I don't remember the exact number, but he was on pace to hit, to get to that 61 number. So,
I actually just looked that up. At the time of the strike, he had 43 homers, was on pace to hit 63, and he had 96 RBIs, which was second of Bagwell's 119 at the time.
Right. So he was on pace to get to the home run record by a long stretch, and this is before you had McGuire and Sosa on steroids doing it. And then you look around, like that Expo team, they had Pedro Martinez on that team, Larry Walker, Moises Alou, who I think is a phenomenal player. They just had many good players.
Cliff Floyd, Rondell White.
Absolutely. I mean,
Will Cordero, Ken Hill.
Kenny Hill was good, too. He was a good starting pitcher. They had arms. They had hitting. I agree with you, Chandler. That team is still in Montreal if everything had broke right. I don't think they were had to sell off the pieces that they did, like Pedro was the first one. And don't forget, they did have a young Randy Johnson, not that year, before that, too. They were putting together pieces. They were scouting properly and putting pieces together that make that team relevant, but then Grissom goes to Atlanta. Alou went to, I think he go to the Giants, and then the Marlins, and then Walker went to Colorado. I mean, it just broke it apart, and it was a shame to watch that because that team was terrible for a while, and they just got good. But go ahead, John.
I'm just, as you talk a name and names, Rondell White's career was never the same because he was built for that park in Montreal. Cliff Floyd's career was destroyed by that because he wound up playing first base in Florida. I remember he had that injury, because he couldn't play the outfield anymore. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, that strike, Cliff Floyd, and nothing, Cliff Floyd at that time was on up and come, man. He was truly a five-tool guy at the time as an outfielder. People don't realize by the time he got to the Mets, he wasn't quite the same guy. When he first came to Montreal, Cliff Floyd was a bona fide stud as an outfielder. Okay, he could still run, he could throw, he could hit. And in that ballpark, he wasn't a dead pole hitter. He was actually hitting the off field, so he was using all of his tools. A lot of guys' careers all through baseball just got so impacted by that strike. And, I mean, just by Montreal being you know, what happened with the Expos going forward after that. Like you said, all of the guys that wound up dispersed all over the league. I mean, if you look at some of the names that came out of that farm system, the Guerreros, both of them. Remember, there was a time when Wilson Guerrero was thought to be better than his brother.
Right. I mean, they had some phenomenal talent. John Wetland in that bullpen. I mean, it was
Dante Bichette at one point. They had Galarraga, Will Cordero. I mean, they flipped the line of the shield for Pedro Martinez. You can't really be mad at that.
That was a controversial trade, too, NJ. I remember, you know, I've read about it lately, but I remember that trade because I loved him. I loved him as a player, and Pedro was unproven. Nobody really knew what you were going to get out of that guy. That was a controversial trade, and that turned out to be, you know, a smart move that just didn't pan out because they couldn't keep him.
And then if you look, you know, like I said, 94, Ken Hill would have won the Cy Young for them. You know, and some of the other guys, man, I mean, Sean Perry was a hell of a third baseman at that point. I mean, Aaron Fletcher was an all-star. I mean, before that, they had Randy Johnson, they had Piazza, Calvaraga. I mean, they had a lot of talent go through there. And they just, could never keep it all together, and that was the one year they had a chance to do it, and obviously we know what happened.
Yeah, I mean, it is a shame. It was a shame that happened to that team. It was crazy to watch. I couldn't believe it that it was a threat. You know, we weren't going to have a World Series, and then to see it happen in September and October came and went, and there was no baseball, no World Series. It was, as a 13-year-old, I was getting ready for, I was just getting finished with Babe Ruth that year and not to have a World Series and go into fall ball. It was crazy. It was a crazy time. But, yes, call in number 917-889-9592. Baseball Buffet, Chandler Knight, NJ, the Florida Kane, chilling with the villain, talking a little baseball. So let's fast forward 20 years, the state of affairs in baseball today. You know, last week we talked trade deadline moves, and we praised the Detroit Tigers for getting David Price, and rightfully so. He's one of the better arms in the league. But, you know, a funny thing happened on the way to Detroit. That team has started to free fall. They look terrible in a midweek series against the Yankees, and the struggles have continued. And you look up in that AL Central, the Kansas City Royals are in first place. I got blown out yesterday by the first place Athletics, but I mean the Detroit Tigers are in a free fall, and the Kansas City Royals until yesterday looked like they couldn't lose a game, 10 games over 500, and playing some good baseball. Quietly making some moves. They acquired Josh Willingham, I think it was yesterday or today, in the trade with the Twins. They're quietly getting it together, good pitching staff. And the Detroit Tigers, outside of their big hands, I mean, they have a lot of problems. And you know, we could praise the management for getting the players that they have, but they didn't address the holes that they have on this team, and it's starting to show up. I mean, Chandler, what's going on in the AL Central? I mean, Verlander, he's going to miss his first start of his career, it looks like, with that shoulder inflammation. They said it wasn't serious, but it is serious enough that he can't make his next start. What's going on with the Tigers, and can they hold off the Royals, or are the Royals for real going to take this division? Cam, are you there? All right, Chandler's out there. We're going to try and get Chandler back. NJ, I'll point that question to you. With the Tigers and the Royals, what's going on in the AL Central?
Well, I mean, you know, something we talked about a little bit last night. I mean, since the All-Star break, before that, the Tigers have been absolutely awful. I mean, the Royals have done this the last couple of years where they hang around for a little while. I mean, it seems they hang around, a couple weeks longer every year. So I don't necessarily know that, they're a decent ball club. They're playing really good ball of late, but I don't necessarily know that, they're still ready to, to make that step to wind up, not only winning the division, making the playoffs, but winning the division. But I do think what will happen, what I see happening, I think they'll hang around just long enough, but they'll probably wind up, you know, a half game or a game on the outside looking in when all is said and done. And the Tigers, you know, wind up righting the ship and, you know, figuring out, you know, what it is that they're supposed to be doing. And, you know, they will wind up winning the division. But, I mean, granted, they were up, you know, what, 10 games, you know, a month or so ago. I mean, what's happened to them is just, it's mind-boggling to see a team that good playing that poorly. And, you know, like I said, I mean, the Royals have been, you know, they've been fun to watch. I mean, they, you know, they're definitely not the, you know, the early and mid-90s Royals anymore. They're also, like I said, I still think they're a player or two away, you know, from really being a serious contender. Talking about last night, you know, busted a few balls in their favor. If anything, you know, I think they kind of get a 20 favor by, you know, taking advantage of 220 average off of that team. And I mean, he does add a little bit of pop to the middle of the lineup. The only problem is he's barely hitting his weights, so a home run or a strikeout. But I mean, we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting going into the end of the season, but
you know, we'll see. I mean, personally, I'd like to see Kansas City make another deal to actually, you know, do something to upgrade their lineup a little bit in the next, you know, 2 weeks here. But, I mean, we'll see. But I still think they wind up on the outside looking in, and, you know, the Tigers will find a way to, you know, to right the ship and squeak out a, you know, division.
Yeah, I mean, the pitching staffs are about the same ERA-wise. They're about the 370 mark. I mean, the Royals, I think, have a better defense, and they're a much faster team. I just see a lot of holes in this Detroit Tiger team as far as, you know, they have the starting pitchers. They have the big bopper in Cabrera, but, you know, not for nothing. Cabrera's numbers are down, you know, from his ungodly pace. I mean, he's still one of the best players in the league. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, his numbers are not where they were last year. So he's not being as productive. He doesn't have as much protection. They traded away their center fielder. Verlander, you know, we could say what we want about Verlander. He's not having a good year, and he's hurt. I mean, he has a lot of problems as well. I mean, I honestly feel like the Royals are right to take this division because the Tigers have just played terrible baseball, and it hasn't gotten any better since the All-Star break. I mean, they're not hitting with, you know, runners in scoring position. I mean, they're just not driving in runs like they were last year. I mean, the Royals aren't a heavy-hitting team, but, I mean, they can manufacture some runs, and they're starting to play some much better baseball. I love Shields pitching-wise. I just think the Royals – I don't know if you agree, AJ, but I just think the Royals are – they're ready. They're ready to make that move, and they're going for it. The Willingham trade's not a major one, but it shows that they're going for it.
You know what? I mean, like I said, I mean, they're definitely better than they have been. And like I said, I'm used to them hanging around for a little while and then ultimately just, you know, dropping out of it and, you know, disappearing after that, which, you know, I mean, whatever. It is what it is. But I still just, you know, I really just have a hard time, you know, thinking that they're going to wind up winning. I just don't see them as being, you know, as having done anything to seriously upgrade their roster over the past couple of seasons. So, I mean, that's why I see them still on the outside looking in. I'm not convinced that, you know, they're ready to take that next step yet. And, I mean, I haven't seen them make any moves that will really shake up the roster to make them better, that, you know, could really make you say, hey, they're going for it. They want to win now. Whereas if you look at, like, what Oakland did, for example, you know, for example, the John Lester trade. I mean, you can look at that and say, you know, Billy Beane is taking on a high-paid rental and giving up, you know, one of the, you know, fan favorites, one of his better players to upgrade their staff to win now. To me, that's a sign of Oakland going for it to win now. But Kansas City still has a lot of holes and hasn't done anything like that. They haven't done anything significant enough to really upgrade the team to give you the impression, you know, that they're trying to win now. I just don't see it.
I mean, you could say that about the Royals, but I look at what's going on with the Tigers. I mean, they have good starting pitchers. But, I mean, you look at the list of people they've given up, you know, in the last year. Soria now, he's hurt. He's on the DL. I just look at this team. It's just a lack of depth behind their big boppers and their ace pitchers that is it's exposing them, in my opinion. I mean, they landed Cabrera, if I'm not mistaken, right? And now he's hurt.
Well, here's the way I see it with the Tigers. And, you know, we talked about it last night with the fact that, you know, you get into the playoffs, you essentially go to four-man rotation. And at this point, Verlander looks to be, you know, the Tim Lincecum of a couple of years ago, the guy that gets moved to the bullpen. So the reality of it is, I mean, you know how, I mean, once it comes out to the playoffs, pitching is what's going to win it for them. And right now, I mean, Verlander isn't what he has been, but he's still a pretty damn good pitcher. But what's crazy about it is he's right now the number five starter on the Tigers. I mean, you have Scherzer and Price at the top. You have Sanchez and Porcello. And if you can put Verlander in the bullpen, if you can get anything at all out of Jim Johnson as a reclamation project and he can return to half of what he was in Baltimore, if Story is healthy, he's a damn good year in Texas. And Joe Nathan, again, I mean, he's another one that when he's healthy, you know, the last 6 or 7 years, he's been one of the better closers in baseball. So if you can get anything out of Jim Johnson, if you can get Nathan, you know, to figure himself out, and you can get Story healthy, if you put Verlander in the bullpen, I mean, essentially, it could be, really a six-inning proposition, for whoever the opposing lineup is. And, I mean, if you're the Tigers, if you can shorten a playoff game to, you know, 6 innings, it's, at that point, all you need is 1 or 2 runs, and you can win games 1-0 and 2-1 because you're going to have the pitching to pitch with anybody. And, I mean, Sanchez and Porcello probably aren't as good as most teams' number one. Most of them would be as good as most teams, you know, 2 or 3 that they face in the playoffs. But the reality is for the Tigers, they're their 3 and 4, and there's no team out there really that I see in the American League anyway that has a 1 and 2 that can really, I don't think, go toe-to-toe with Scherzer and Price at the top of the rotation. I mean, if you look in the National League when it comes to, you know, the World Series, I mean, the Dodgers obviously would have to be in that conversation. But in the American League, I mean, you know, you have Lester, you have Sonny Gray, and you have Kazmir in Oakland. Gray is improving. Kazmir's had struggles in the playoffs. So, and I mean, you look at Scherzer, you look at Price. I mean, they've both done, you know, both done well in the playoffs. They both pitched in the World Series. Like I said, I think, you know, if you're Detroit, if you can just find a way to make it to the playoffs, you can pitch with any of it, and they can ride pitching right to the World Series.
Yeah, I mean, they can ride the pitching, but they're not hitting. And that's, you know, it's like the Yankees. They're riding a little wave of pitching. Now the pitching's starting to, you know, not improve, but not pitching as well as they were, a couple of rough starts here and there. And now you're looking at this team, this Tiger team, that you're paying a lot of money to 2-star players, Verlander and Cabrera. I'm not sitting here trying to say Cabrera's on the downward spiral of his career, but he's in his 30s. His numbers are dipping a little bit. I mean, just a little bit. Still one of the best players in the game. But you locked that guy up for over $160 million. You locked up Verlander for a lot of money, too. So, I mean, you know, they're not, to me, they're not addressing what they needed to address. They just have holes on this team. This lineup doesn't scare you like it was scaring you a year or two ago. I just look at the Tigers, and you make great points with their pitching staff, you know, granted, but, you know, if you can't score more than the other team, no matter how many runs you're giving up, they might give up 1 or 2 runs. They're only scoring one, if that. They're just not in it.
Let's look at their lineup. I mean, let's look at their lineup for a minute. I mean, you know, Cabrera, it's, you know what, for him, it's a down season, but coming off, you know, MVP, triple crown seasons, I mean, the reality of it is, I mean, the guy wasn't going to win. He wasn't going to win, you know, 10 straight MVPs. I mean, he wasn't going to, you know, win the triple crown and, you know, be in the discussion every other year after that, you know, for the next 10 years. So, yeah, I mean, it's a down season compared to what he's done. But the reality of it is, I mean, he's still having a really good year. I mean, Victor Martinez, Ian Kinsler, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, if you look right now, I know everybody in the beginning was kind of up in the air about the Prince Fielder trade. I mean, Dombrowski, he looks like a hero after that. I mean, look at, you know, just look at this year. I mean, not only did he get rid of
that ridiculous contract that Fielder had. The kids, he's had a damn good year. Fielder, you know, Fielder's season's over. It has been, you know, for a month and a half now.
You look at, you know, I said, you look at that lineup, top to bottom, and, I mean, they're not hitting now, and that's a little disturbing because they definitely picked a, you know, a bad time of the year to not hit. But the reality is, I mean, that lineup is still a really good lineup. And those guys, you know, have done it in the past. And as long as, you know, if everybody's going to go into a slump, it just sucks when your entire lineup, you know, picks the same time of the season to go into a slump. But, I mean, if you look, you know, I mean, Alex Avila's never been a great hitter. I mean, Cabrera's still hitting over 300. Kinsler's hitting 300, you know, almost 300. Rajai Davis having a good year. Torrey Hunter's having another 300-plus season. You know, Victor Martinez, you know, 25 homers, just hit about 320.
So all in all, you know, for the season, these guys have just lately are not hitting. And like I said, it's
everybody's going to go into a slump, but when, you know, you have six out of the nine guys in your lineup that decide to slump at the same time, it's rough to overcome, but I don't think, you know, I don't think that this is going to continue forever. It's just, I mean, it can't. These guys are too good to do that. I mean, I look at
Miguel Cabrera hitting 310, and I'm like, damn, the guy, you know, he's finally hitting his weight, which, you know, I mean, you're used to him hitting 330, 340. But, I mean, let's face the facts. That's not, I mean, unless you're Tony Gwynn, you're not going to hit 340 or 350 every year. But Miguel Cabrera has still winds up, he's going to finish 315, 320. Respectable here, but compared to what everybody's used to, you know, Miguel Cabrera in the season.
Well, it's all relative. I mean, he'll wind up with 25 homers. He'll drive in well over 100 runs. He'll look close to 320. That's a pretty damn good year. And, I mean, it's tough to argue that he's not earning his money because, I mean, the reality of it is the last two seasons that he had, it's going to make this season look bad. It'll probably make next season look bad. But, I mean, he's still having a very good season. And Victor Martinez, the kind of year he's having, I mean, it's ridiculous. Torrey Hunter, you know, is 38 years old. I mean, he's hitting almost 300. He's got, you know, he'll finish with 20, you know, 20-some homers. He'll drive in close to 80. And he's still playing great defense. I mean, they're just going through a rough patch, but they're not a bad baseball team by any means.
I don't think they're necessarily a bad team. I just think they have trouble, and I think they're not running away with this division like they used to. I think they're in for a dogfight. Look out for Cleveland, too. I mean, not for nothing. I mean, yeah, they play the Yankees over the weekend, and they're hovering around 500, but quietly making some moves here and there and starting to, you know, pick it up a little bit out there. So this Central is not a runaway. I look at the Royals like the Pirates for the last couple of years. They've gotten off the starts where they look like they were going to get in the playoffs and they free fall. I think they're starting to figure it out, and I think they're starting to learn how to win. So I would be on the lookout. But speaking of teams that can't hit, I'm looking at my pitiful Yankees. It's an embarrassment to see this Bronx Bomber team not being able to hit at all. And then what happens? As sure as the day is long, I mean, the Steinbrenners come out and, you know, they don't have the pizzazz that the elder statesman George M. Steinbrenner III would have when he had his little missive, his little statement that he would release and it would be read in the paper or by local sports radio. But I mean, he was at a owner's banquet or something like that, and basically he said, you know, we invested a lot of money in this team in the off season. And you know, they're not getting it done. He just flat out said the high-priced offense is not getting it done. You know, they're professionals, and I know they're turning around, but, you know, they're not getting it done. That's basically a shot at Beltran and McCann, who's McCann's on the DL with a concussion. But, I mean, they're not hitting it, and it's apparent to everybody. And when they asked him about Brian Cashman, Chandler Knight's boy, you know, he said, you know, because his contract's up at the end of the year, he basically said, let's get to October 1st. So who knows? His job's on the line. I mean, a missive type, you know, not the George Steinbrenner type missive, but how, you know, letting it be known that he's not happy and he's disappointed. And we got Chandler back. So I'm going to let Chandler take this. I mean, Chandler, thanks for calling back. Did you see how Steinbrenner said about the sad state of affairs with the Yankees and the kind of little shot at Cashman saying, you know, let's get to October 1st.
Chandler, you with us?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I didn't see what Hal said. Which Hal, first of all, and what did he say?
Oh, okay. So it was Hal Steinbrenner. I think they were at a banquet in Baltimore, and basically they asked him about the Yankees. So he said, you know, this is a high-priced offense. We spent a lot of money in the offseason, and they're not getting it done. And basically, you know, basically took a shot at Beltran and McCann, saying, you know, they're professionals and all that good stuff. But, and I'm paraphrasing. I'm not reading the quote. I'm trying to get the quote. But, I mean, he's paraphrasing saying, you know, this is a professional team, but they're not getting it done. And they're not hitting. And it's pretty, you know, bad to watch, basically. And they asked him about Cashman because Cashman's contract is up at the end of this year. And he said, well, let's get to October 1st. So, I mean, the shot has been fired by the Steinbrenners. They're not happy with the Yankees' performance. So what do you think about that, what Hal Steinbrenner said?
It's about time. It's about time that somebody takes Cashman to task for the way he's put this team together and the farm system. And we've talked about this. Brian Cashman is great at making small moves. He's not good at big moves. He brought in a guy that everybody – see – in all season, you and I went at it about Brian McCann. I said I didn't want Brian McCann. And the reason being is he's a guy who's going to change his whole approach to try to fit the stadium, and he's going to be terrible. And he has been terrible. Okay, he's not going to be a good hitter with the Yankees because of that short porch. Carlos Beltran, I'm sorry, Carlos Beltran 37 years old. What did anybody expect out of Carlos Beltran? I think people say, oh, his baseball card, he's 37. And he's been injury prone. Guys aren't hitting. The fact of the matter is the Yankees' problem all season has been lack of hitting, and it has been for almost 3 years, has been lack of offense. Lack of offense. Brian Cashman spent a lot of money in the offseason. The only guy producing is Jacoby Ellsbury. Brian McCann has been terrible. Carlos Beltran can't get on the field. Mark Teixeira, every time you turn around, he's got a boo-boo. Okay? Oh, I hurt my pinky. I can't play. McCutcheon is trying to play with a cracked rib. You can't play with a cut pinky. Are you kidding me? Good. And matter of fact, it pains me to say it, but in many ways I hope you don't make it so Brian Cashman can be fired.
I mean, you know, and I think Teixeira came out and said, you know, the days when you play it every day are not kind of – that's not happening. I mean – he is being accountable. He is being a leader, but you're right. I mean, he did get the pinky injury. He's not playing. He plays every other week, and it's, like, frustrating to get these guys going. I mean, I try to defend Cashman for the most part. I try to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I do go after him. I do kill him, too. But you're absolutely right. You look at these moves now, as it stands, you let one of the best hitters in the league go and Cano, because you didn't want to pay for 3 extra years. A homegrown guy, and then you bring in Beltran, who I thought was going to be much better than this. Last year, I mean, come on, he had a great year last year, and now he's batting, what, 240, can't stay on the field, got the bone spur. McCann looks like he should have never, ever left Atlanta. and it's a sad state of affairs. MJ, I mean, I know you must be loving this as a Met fan, but, I mean, talk to me about what Hal Steinbrenner said about the team and where do we go from here? What do we do now?
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where I give him credit for at least, I mean, it took a little bit longer than it should have, but at least to come out and admit that the team is playing terrible and basically challenge everybody to step up, whereas, you know, his father would do that on April 15th if they lost 3 games in a row. And so, I mean, I mean, at least on that end, I mean, I give him credit for finally saying something. But on the other end of that, if you look at what he was talking about, then they asked him about, you know, A-Rod. And he said, you know, talking about coming back. And he said, that's what he's planning for. That's what we're planning for. Alex will be ready. So it's like, on one end, you talk about, you know, you basically call out guys like Beltran
you know, and Teixeira and Brian McCann for being, you know, being high-priced and underperforming and not doing anything. But then on the other end of that, you're talking about, you know, expecting to have Alex Rodriguez back in your lineup. You know, I mean, being, you know, 40 years old and, you know, a year out of baseball and not having been healthy, you know, 4 or 5 years. I mean, at that point, it's almost like, wait a minute, what the hell are you talking about? Like, make up your mind. The other thing, though, is, I mean, Cashman was definitely his father's boy. And, you know, I think, you know, the old man basically gave him an open checkbook and said, spend it however you want. And I think times have changed a little bit, and I definitely don't see, you know, Hal being nearly as enamored with Cashman as his father was. And I think even if they do make the playoffs, you know, and it's a one-and-done type scenario, sort of winning the World Series, I don't, you know, with, you know, major contributions from guys like Beltran and McCann, I don't see any way that Cashman is back next year anyway. I mean, he's had, you know, I know we talked about it, you know, a week or two ago. He had opportunity upon opportunity upon opportunity in the last month or so to make that team better. And he made a couple of trades, but none of them did anything to significantly improve that roster.
And it's one of those things where ultimately that's going to be his downfall, because you had, you know, you had all these opportunities to do something, and you managed to make the team worse. And, I mean, you know, Stephen Drew is hitting, you know, like a buck and a half. Since they got Prado, he's hitting under 200. You know, Chase Headley started out hot. He's come back down to earth. He's hitting about 250 now. I mean, as a team, their batting average is about 250. I mean, you have, you know, you have those kind of guys in the lineup, and you're paying guys that much money, you expect more than a 250 team batting average. And it's ridiculous, and I think it should also be a wake-up call that, you know, going out and signing, you know, guys that used to be stars 5 years ago that are now old and past their prime to these Albatross Thompson.
Not anything to hold.
I mean, you know, and I'm glad you brought up the A-Rod point, because, you know, that was something I saw in there. And at first I'm like, A-Rod again. But, I mean, they have no other choice. If A-Rod was ready to play and healthy and they could have him in this lineup, they would welcome him back with open arms. They have no choice. I mean, nobody in this lineup is hitting. Now I'm looking at ways, how can you flip Carlos Beltran? I would flip him for a bag of balls if I could right now, because, I mean, he's useless right now. It's a sad state of affairs. The empire is crumbling around us, and I think going forward, you're right, they need to change their philosophy. This going out, and I've said it for a couple of weeks now, and I'll keep saying it, the days of buying these big free agents, those days are gone, all right? These teams, these younger teams, they're locking their young talent up early. Like, look at the Angels. They locked up Trout early. He won't be a free agent until he's in his 30s. I mean, you know Sterling and Pittsburgh, they locked him up early. Atlanta locked up all their young talent early. I mean, their young talent's not playing well right now. I mean, they're free falling.
Well, here's something else you got a question too. Is, I mean, yeah, they went out and made trades. Arm eligible for the last time. You know, after this season. So you go out and trade for a guy, you know, who's a pretty good third baseman. You know, I mean, he was a decent hitter in a terrible lineup in San Diego in a ballpark bigger than Yellowstone Park. And he's only 30 years old.
So, I mean, but he's a third baseman and nothing else. So, I mean, at that point, why even mention A-Rod, knowing that, you know, at that point, you're not going to have a platoon for DHs, you know, with him and, you know, with A-Rod and some of these other old broken-down has-beens they have. I mean, you're not going to have, a $30 million, you know, DH platoon.
I mean, that's idiotic. So at some point, you would have to expect A-Rod would play third base, but why would you even want him back when you went out and made the trade for Chase Headley? I mean, that had to be looking, you know, not just this year, but next year. And then you have to think, well, he would be in for big money next year in San Diego. San Diego's not going to pay him. if he performs well in a year and a half, we have the ability to sign him long term, and he could be, you know, a solution at third base for the next 4 or 5 years for us. So I don't even understand why A-Rod is even in the conversation for them. That's mind-boggling to me.
Well, I'm pretty sure somebody brought it up to him, and he answered it. But I mean, Chandler, what do you think about the A-Rod? You know, the A-Rod being thrown in the mix in this whole mix of that he was asked all these questions at a press conference.
You know, I don't have a problem with A-Rod being on this team. He's still a better third baseman than anybody they got. Not defensively.
Right.
Headley is very good defensively. Headley's a free agent after this season. So,
yep.
And can you sign him and still have A-Rod? Sure you can, but you have to get rid of Beltran. Beltran has to go. Suzuki is off this team after next season. So you do have a spot for A-Rod to DH. And also, not for nothing, Alex can shift over to first base on those days when Mark Teixeira has his boo-boos. Because Mark Teixeira is not going to play more than 120 games in the season. He's just not. So Teixeira's not playing more than 120 games. Alex coming back. If you can give Alex 50 games at third base and the rest at DH and maybe some first base, that's still a threat of a bat in the lineup. And the fact of the matter is there's no threats in this lineup. Everybody in this lineup can be pitched to, and there's no threat that, well, if I make a mistake, because nothing. Mark Teixeira's not a threat anymore. Brian McCann isn't a threat because he refuses to use the whole field like he did in Atlanta. Teixeira refuses to use the whole field like he did everywhere but in New York. There is a spot for him, and there's also a spot for Headley. And everybody keeps talking about the Cano thing. The Cano thing, it wouldn't have been that big a deal had they made the trade for Brandon Phillips. Then
right.
You would have had a second baseman who could hit. You would have solidified the middle of your infield, okay, and you may not have needed to trade for Chase Headley. You could have lived with Solarte or whoever you put at third base because you had someone hitting in the middle of the infield who could actually hit. You know, the thing with Cashman is not about him spending a lot of money. The Yankees are printing money. They can afford to handle those contracts. There's no salary cap in baseball. I don't know why people get hung up on contracts. There's no albatross contracts in baseball because the Yankees are willing to spend the money. They're willing to spend the money. The problem is Cashman spends it incorrectly. He spends it incorrectly. I told you before the season started, I wanted Ruiz from Philadelphia. I told you I wanted any catcher other than McCann. Had he gone out and went after Chooch in Philly, we'd have a solid catcher. We'd have a guy who could hit who was a run producer. Had they went after Nelson Cruz, especially after you got Ellsberg. Once you sign Ellsberg, you go get Nelson Cruz. You go get a thumper, okay, because you already had Ichiro. You didn't have to sign Beltran. You could have signed Nelson Cruz, all right. Then you would have had Ichiro on the bench for defense as a defensive replacement and to spell him on days when he's tired and you just want to give him a blow. And you still got your other two defensive outfields. And Ichiro can play all three outfield spots. There was a way for them to spend that same amount of money but make better choices. So at the end of the day, yeah, Alex coming back is going to be a help to this team. Because not for nothing, if you look at his notes from last year, he's still a better third baseman than anybody they got right now.
Absolutely. I mean, and I don't remember. I think the Phillips deal would have had to involve Gardner. But at the end of the day, I mean, I would keep Gardner because I mean he's the only one of the few guys that's hitting. He was smacking home runs left and right. But, I mean, yeah, they could have upgraded that position even without keeping Cano. But the days of spending on big free agents, to me, is dead. It is what it is. It's dead. The young guys are getting locked up sooner by these teams that are getting rich off the Yankees' luxury tax money, and they're paying to keep these guys so that when they hit their 30s and they start to break down, then the Yankees could go ahead and grab them all they want. Then they're overpaying for talent that's breaking down. And that's basically what the Yankees are doing now. And that philosophy has to change. And not for nothing. The Yankees, yeah, they're willing to spend the money. Yeah, they can make basically print money. But, hey, once Jeter retires, not a lot of people are getting to the stadium. Their attendance is down, okay? Their attendance is down this year, the lowest it's been in a while. It's been steadily going down. When A-Rod is in the lineup, attendance is up. When A-Rod is in the lineup, ratings are up. So, I mean, they would welcome back A-Rod because he's a better hitter than anybody they have on this team right now outside of maybe Gardner and Ellsbury, arguably. But ratings-wise, this guy is a magnet. He gets butts in the seats. And that's what they need. They need people to come out to this stadium that they they splurged on and paid for $15 beers. And A-Rod's the guy that can do it. So they would absolutely welcome him and his drama and his $60 million that they owe him on his contract back. But, you know, we're almost closing up the kitchen. But I know, NJ, you had something you wanted to bring up really quick that we talked about before the show had started. I want you to bring that to the kitchen before we get out of here.
Well, I was reading something. CSN in Philly yesterday was talking about how the Phillies have been scouting the shit out of the Red Sox lately. And the rumor there was that they've been talking to the Red Sox about a deal for Hamels that would be centered around Jackie Bradley Jr., Xander Bogaerts, and Christian Vasquez. And I don't know if it's related to anything at all. It may or may not be. But just in another little bit of interesting news today, Cole Hamels and his wife put their house on the market in Pennsylvania, in Delaware County. So it's just something to, something to keep an eye on. Like I said, it's been, reported over and over, but CSN Philly, really got into it yesterday as far as, how heavy, the Phillies have been scouting the Red Sox. And, to be honest with you, I mean, I would think that those two match up really, really well. The other name that, I saw mentioned on, I don't remember where the hell it was, MLB Trade Rumors maybe, was Cespedes. Possibly also being part of a trade, for Hamels. I mean, you would think that, those two teams match up really, really well. You would think that Hamels would be a good fit for the Red Sox. The Red Sox apparently are not one of the teams, that are listed on, that are part of his no trade clause. So it's, I think it's going to be interesting to see. And I mean, I'm still shocked beyond surprised that Marlon Byrd is still a member of the Phillies at this point. I have absolutely no idea what the hell Ruben Amaro is doing, and it really wouldn't surprise me to see him trade him. But if he trades Hamels before a guy like Marlon Byrd, it's just going to really cement what an awful, awful GM he really is.
Tell me, I mean, you think if there's any juice to the fact that Hamels has his house up for sale and the Phillies are looking at the Red Sox prospects?
I don't know about the house, but, I mean, those two teams do line up. I mean, if the Phillies truly want to start a rebuild, one of the teams you would look at is Boston. Boston is not going to pay John Lester. I don't know why he thinks they're going to pay him. I don't know how stupid is he. Has he not paid attention to the Red Sox history when it comes to the pitchers? They're ace pitchers. Once those pitchers' contracts end, they kind of screw them over. Very few guys have left Boston on a good note. Very few. They basically kicked guys out the door that still had good years in their bodies left. Okay, so why he thinks Boston's going to pay him, I don't know. But this is a way they can get around paying Lester and get younger. And because not for nothing, they don't believe in Bogaerts. They don't believe in Jackie Bradley. So getting rid of those two guys won't really hurt them. Vasquez, they can get a catcher. They can get a decent catcher, because there's going to be some guys available. It makes sense from Red Sox perspective, and there'll be less money and less years than it would be for Lester. Because Hamill only has, 4 or 5 years left on his contract, whereas with Lester's going to want 7. That's 2 less years you got to pay a guy. That's 2 less years at 10 to, close to $20 million a year? That's $40 million, up to $40 million they'll have saved. So it makes sense from the Boston perspective. And if Amaro was smart, that's the team he would make a deal with.
Yeah, I mean, those teams too just line up nicely. And, yeah, Lester, I don't know. He's talking about – I don't think he's saying, verbatim that he would take less money. But, I mean, his agents have told him that, prepare to be blown out of the water by offers you're going to get. And he's like, I don't need to be blown out of the water. I mean, he's trying to line it up to go back to Boston. But you're right. Boston, they have notoriously have not treated their pitchers great. I mean, Pedro, Clemens, what have you. These guys, when they're about to turn that corner, maybe a year or two away, they let them go before that, and they don't turn around. They don't look back. So, Lester, I think he better take his money and go somewhere where he can be wanted. So I thought it was interesting. I think there's a little bit of juice to it, and I wouldn't be surprised if Hamill, he should be on the move, and Bird, he needs to be on the move too. I don't know why he's still wearing a Phillies uniform right now, but got to close up the kitchen. Chandler, thanks for calling in. We had a lot of trouble with the phone and all that crap today with Blog Talk Radio, but thanks for calling in, brother. Give us a closing shout.
Always fun. Pineda, five innings, one run, two hits. Nice job.
No pine tar, right? But yeah, he looked good. So he looked good so far. So that's encouraging to see. They could definitely use him. Hopefully, he gives them some length going forward. But again, Pineda doesn't hit, unfortunately. NJ, thanks for calling in, bro. Give us a closing shout. And we didn't talk a lot of Mets today, so that kind of helped out, right?
Well, you know what? I mean, there isn't much to talk about for the Mets lately. I mean, to show you that things are all as well in Mets land again, Jeremy Hefner was, you know, throwing minor league rehab games coming back from Tommy John surgery and somehow fractured his forearm and retore his UCL. So, yeah, I mean, only in Mets land, just thank God it was Hefner and not Matt Harvey. Other than that, I mean, Pineda's at five innings. That means he's probably about 10 or 12 pitches away from being back with the DL, because that would be par for the course for him, either that or, you know, maybe getting another 10-game suspension for Pine Tar first before going back on the DL. But other than that, it's definitely something interesting. We've got about 2 weeks, you know, to see any other kind of trades that are going to be made. And, you know, I'm really curious to see, you know, if and when the Tigers will finally, you know, remember how to sit and finally start playing Tiger baseball again.
Yeah, I think the Tigers need to go for Marlon Byrd. They need any bat they can get in that lineup. And, yeah, I mean, the Mets are going to use Hefner as a learning tool for Harvey not to try and come back this year, because he is definitely trying to fix this year, and I think that's the worst thing that kid can do. I mean, he's just being stupid at this point. You don't come back this year. And unfortunately, to see DeGrom go down, he was pitching so well. So, you know, what can you do with the Mets? Same old Mets. It's the only Yankees. They can't hit two runs today. I mean, give me a break. But thanks for calling in. Everybody, thanks for listening. Blog Talk Radio, SportsCityChefs.com. Sports City shows all week. The Crossover Cafe tomorrow, a Master Chef style, talk a little basketball. The NBA schedule came out. I think they'll be highlighting some games that are on the schedule this year, Christmas Day games, all that good stuff, and talking about the Donald Sterling trade sale of the team. A lot of fun stuff going on, Crossover Cafe, and then the roundtable went up with Chandler Knight, and shows all week. So get to the website, get to Facebook, get to Twitter, all that good stuff, and enjoy the rest of your baseball. And for the boys, talking to them, we had a lot of fun, and we out. Peace.